You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Blessed above all of creation, it was a rare and precious pearl. Conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free, it was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. The reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switch and bait, criticize, confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid a child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth. They pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor. While the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand.
Today we have another great radio program on Connecting the Dots. We have a very, very special guest and a friend of mine who I've been working with for the last couple of years, Elizabeth Yore. Liz is an attorney. She's worked in the human trafficking field, trying to expose all the human trafficking and everything that's going on. She also is someone who has been very deeply involved with the Catholic Church. She's written a number of articles, in fact, a lot of articles for The Remnant, and which is the leading Catholic publication in the United States. And she is a lady who today we're going to be talking about the Pope Francis. We're going to be talking about what I've referred to before with Liz as the Red and Green Pope. And we're going to be learning an awful lot today about something that I don't think a lot of people in the Catholic Church realize, but we've seen a fundamental transformation within the Catholic Church, very much like we've seen that same fundamental transformation when Barack Obama became president. And with that, Liz, welcome to the radio program. You are absolutely dynamite lady. I'd love to have you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself and about some of the things that you've been working on.
Well, thank you, Dan. I'm an attorney. I've been involved in child advocacy international, child protection for the last 30 years during my legal career. I've worked as the general counsel for the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children in Virginia, handling international and domestic child abduction cases. I've also worked as the general counsel for the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services. At the time I was general counsel there, there were 50,000 children in the welfare system, child welfare system in Illinois. I handled human trafficking cases while I was there, handled a $1.3 billion state budget, and really explored all sorts of new alternatives to protect children, to find our missing children. And then finally, my last position was as special counsel at Harpo Productions. That's Oprah Winfrey's production company. There I was her child advocate. I also handled her child sex scandal at her school in South Africa. So I liaisoned with the South African Child Protection Police and investigated what was going on in the school. and also handled a number of shows at Harpo in the Oprah Winfrey Show, dealing with issues such as child advocacy, child protection, internet protection. And so as a result, I found myself in a very kind of strange place. I'm a faithful practicing Catholic, and I decided that I was going to look into this new pope who was talking about an issue that I care very deeply about, child trafficking. And so I guess that's the explanation of why I'm here today, is to share with your audience the result of my experience in meeting the Pope, and then as a result, investigating what was going on in the Vatican under this papacy.
Well, Liz, obviously, we've had this discussion before, but a lot of things have changed over the last couple of years. And I think that it's important that we stay on top of this. And some of the things that have changed have been very in our face, very big changes in the future of the Catholic Church and the future of Christianity in the civilized world, because there's things going on right now that really are going to have a huge impact. That's why we're having the program today. And that's something that I know you're trying to make aware, America and the rest of the world aware of, the transition into a one world church that has been happening worldwide, but especially has been facilitated by Pope Francis. And that's something that you're going to expose today. So thank you for doing that. I appreciate the fact that you are such a honest, candid lady and so fearless. It's amazing to me that so many of the ladies in this country are the ones that are more fearless than the men. That's astounding. That's kind of an indictment against maybe some of the role reversals we've had by many of men, our male leaders in this country. Thank you for being so forthcoming. So,
thank you, Dan.
Did you want to go ahead and start your program?
Yes, I do. I'm trying to figure out here how to share it. I'm having a little bit of problems, so maybe Thumper can assist me on this. But I'm having, can't find the button to share my my PowerPoint here.
Okay. Well, if we need to, we can back out and we can kind of fill the time with some.
Why don't you? I'm going to back in again and I'll be right back.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you. Thumper, this is going to be a terrific program. We had a chance to visit a little bit earlier in the day with Liz, and I think you've gotten a pretty good idea of what a powerful speaker and what an amazing person she is, and what some of the information she's going to be bringing forward is going to be our audience. So.
Yeah, and I, you know, as I suspected, when the name Oprah came up, a lot of people were in our chat were, oh no, no. But after the conversation that we had with the meeting with Liz right after my last show, Liz's eyes are open. Liz is very much a patriot, and she was describing to me, it was like, okay, they've had infiltrators into our group. She felt like she was an infiltrator with them. Mm-hmm. And she's gonna share a lot more of that with everyone. So, you know, I don't want to spill the beans or anything, but, no, Liz is definitely a patriot. And, what she's going to share with you is going to be very, very, informative. And coming from someone that has been in the belly of the beast, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So,
well, just so you know, Thumper, Liz is a good friend of Mary Fanning and Alan Jones. And so you know that she's on top of some solid information. So,
all right. Looks like
okay,
Liz.
Go ahead, Liz.
You're good. You're good.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, and thanks to our audience. I hope everyone is holding up well during this March Madness. Thank you for joining the webinar today. No matter what your religion or faith beliefs, this presentation, I believe, describes the rapid trajectory of the new underworld order as it is operationalized, and one of its four critical components, which is the one world religion, begins to unfold. And the new world underworld order is not my term, but it was coined from the brilliant Christopher Story in his book of the same name. And what I wanted to remind everybody is the former official of the United States Communist Party, a woman by the name of Bella Dodd, disclosed in 1927 she was tasked by Moscow to start recruiting in place 1,100 communists in Catholic seminaries around the United States. And the purpose was to infiltrate and corrupt the Catholic Church. Now, Bella Dodd ultimately converted. She was a communist from 1927 until 1949. And she converted to Catholicism through the guidance of Blessed Fulton Sheen, who many of you may grow up remembering watching on television. But in 1952, Bella Dodd said that the Catholic Church is the one feared by the communists because it's its only effective opponent. So for the last 7 years of this papacy under Francis, I've tracked, I've investigated and studied every move and pronouncement of Pope Bergoglio. We should have seen red smoke, not white, coming out of the chimney in the Vatican on the evening of his curious election on March 13th, 2013. From the moment he stepped out onto the loggia, the roar of the crowd in St. Peter's, that cool spring night, from that very moment, he has advanced the new underworld order agenda by embracing globalism, socialism, and yes, communism. I've scrutinized, written, and spoken about this Bergoglian Vatican from its explosion of clergy abuse scandals and his personal cover-ups of those scandals to his Gaia-worshipping pagan Pachamama worship, the climate change scam, to his blatant surrender to the United Nations, his surrender to the Islamists and their delusion of the interfaith dialogue, and tragically to Francis's total capitulation to Chairman Xi and the Communist Chinese Party thugs. But let me start where I began. In November of 2013, only 6 months after Francis became Pope, I traveled to the Vatican to attend a Vatican human trafficking conference. Initially, I was excited to learn about the goals of this papacy. Yet, I left the Vatican after personally meeting the Pope and his inner circle, full of dread and foreboding, with the nagging sense that global politics, not the Catholic faith, was Francis's primary focus. Today, around the world, we are reeling from the impact of globalism, and most importantly, the trusting reliance on the People's Republic of China. Our Christian beliefs, our churches, our own way of life is now under assault and endangered by this foreboding, what they call Abrahamic faith initiative, which was promulgated by none other than the man sitting in the chair of Peter, Jorge Bergoglio. Make no mistake, this is a bold and brazen political global movement posing as a benevolent religious initiative. As we endure this China-induced March Madness by President Xi Jinping and his Communist Party, look closely at those aligned forces that are assaulting Christianity. Today, I'm going to discuss another dangerous virus, which has entered into and now is infecting the Catholic Church in the form of a captivating and alluring name like the Abrahamic Faith Initiative, posing as a panacea for humanity under the guise of world peace, human fraternity, the common good, and dialogue. This clever and quaint moniker, the Abrahamic Faith Initiative, attests that all three major faiths share a common link with the Old Testament prophet, Abraham, our common father. Yet the truth is far different. Dr. Mark Dury discusses in great length and scholarship in his long article, The Abrahamic Fallacy, and that in the Islamic faith, the figure of Abraham, contrary to the Christian faith, Abraham is a Muslim. He is the one who gave the name Muslim to Allah's followers, and Abraham taught the same religion of Muhammad. Never mind. They want us to just pretend that we all share the same Abraham. While our discussion today may appear on its face to be about religion, it is far more sinister and intrinsically a political operation, a global takedown of Christianity by the elites. This is the intersection of a new religion which serves the global elite masters of the new underworld order. This, quote, interfaith movement, despite its benign name, ushers in and enables the gateway for a global political confiscation which preempts dependence on God to reliance on the elites of the New World Order. If this seems harsh, just study the destruction of Christianity in the last 18 months in China, thanks to the secret Vatican-China agreement, which has triggered a massive demolition derby of destroyed churches and shuttered worship services. I'm going to discuss that in detail a bit later. Curious, though, isn't it that all our places of worship and churches are shuttered here in the United States as a result of the China virus? Similarly, the Abrahamic Faith Initiative's purpose is to dupe Christians into submitting to the mirage of the interfaith dialogue, whose goal is the imposition of a one-world religion on the New World Order by first destroying Christianity. Folks, I'm going to be very frank today. Pope Francis reigns as the political pope, dutifully carrying out the elite's global political agenda. And there is global money and tremendous power behind this movement. I will expose this nefarious plan, its covert tactics, and unmask the deceptive language and goals. I will introduce you to the motley crew of miscreants and plotters and warn you about their future operations. And finally, what we can do to expose and stop this dangerous takeover, and describe to you the central and integral role played by Francis. Finally, I'm going to discuss another Vatican-enabled operation in China and its catastrophic impact, and that's the Vatican-China secret deal. Now, on to the Abrahamic Faith Initiative. And here he is, Pope Francis, doing the bidding of the United Nations as the New World Order Pope. Many of you probably know or have read about the DHS whistleblower Phil Haney, who tirelessly exposed the infiltration of radical jihadism and jihadis in the United States and in our government. Phil was found dead on February 21st, just a month ago. Phil called me 2 weeks before his murder and encouraged me to continue to speak out about tonight's subject, the Abrahamic Faith Initiative, which Phil knew was a treacherous influence operation peddled by the Muslim Brotherhood and its web of operators. For the sake of this great patriot, please take note about the danger of what is unfolding. This deadly interfaith virus, which appears benign, even laudatory, as it deploys utopian promises and sentimental language like peace and dialogue and human fraternity, rights of man, harmony, and borrows from the sustainable lingo of the climate changers. These terms, folks, are used with a designed purpose, with the specific goal of deceiving and undermining Christian beliefs. Pope Bergoglio has repeatedly supported the mass migration of Muslims into Europe and around the world. He has consistently excused or denied Islamic violence, despite the overwhelming evidence to the contrary. I cannot emphasize enough the linguistic lies, the taqiyya, the discourse of deception used by these people, the seductive jujitsu linguistic words used to lure people into propaganda. This is not a utopian on earth, but that is their promise. All religions are equal and on the same par. And you will hear the language of our common home, our common destiny, our common good, our common faith, our common wealth. That's the language of communism. And like every totalitarian ideology in the 20th century, their tactics are to obscure their intent with benevolent and lofty language designed to co-opt your reason, prey on your emotion and prejudices, and ultimately to deceive you. The net effect is not to elevate Christianity, but to vanquish it. Welcome to the religion of Sharia or Chrislam. Make no mistake, this stealth initiative, as Phil Haney knew, has been underway for many years, even decades, with various mutations and advocates laying the groundwork. I'll speak later about the despicable United States Catholic Cardinal who's been at the center and the prime advocate for the interfaith dialogue for decades. And for a time, he did the bidding of Francis. Drumroll, the time has arrived with the backing of Pope Francis to ramp up this rollout and move into a much higher gear. Yes, the call to prayer, the Abraham Faith Initiative. Listen to the sound of the call to prayer, the muezzin, described by Barack Obama as the most beautiful sound in the world. Here's Pope Francis and the Grand Imam of the world's Muslim Sunnis. His name is Sheikh Ahmad Al-Tayeb. With great fanfare, this initiative was formally launched by Francis on February 4th, 2019, when Francis flew to Abu Dhabi for the signing ceremony with the Grand Imam Ahmad Al-Tayeb. As promised, the lofty title of the document that they sign is entitled Human Fraternity for World Peace and Living Together. Sounds like utopia has arrived. Still, the new Abrahamic Faith Initiative home looks like something out of a George Orwell novel. Watch closely as the One World Religion is publicly launched. I'm going to show you this next video. Notice the lavish production, the dramatic setting with great grand fanfare, funded by the world's wealthy oil Gulf state, the Muslim UAE. I would just note the irony and hypocrisy that Bergoglio, the climate change devotee, who rants against oil-producing countries and despises wealth and capitalism, apparently enjoys the support of one of the world's richest oil producers in the world.
This historical gesture between Pope Francis and the great Sunni Imam of Al-Hazar, Ahmed Al-Tayyib, is beginning to show concrete results. The Higher Committee for Human Fraternity presented their first major project while in New York. This initiative is a tribute to Abraham, whom Jews, Christians, and Muslims see as a common father. It's called the Abrahamic Family House. It's a complex that will integrate a church, mosque, and synagogue, which for the first time will share a collective space for dialogue between the religions. It was designed by architect Sir David Ajavi and seeks to deepen relationships between religions, as well as nurture the values of peaceful coexistence between thought, nationalities, and cultures. The church within the complex will be the second church in Abu Dhabi. In this country, of its 9,500,000 inhabitants, 10% are Christians. The complex will maintain an independent structure for each religion and will have a shared space for meetings. A modern design is thought to be a lasting space for future generations of Jewish, Catholic, and Muslim.
Well, this was supposed to be a gathering and signing ceremony of the three major religions. Note that there was no Jewish leader on hand at the unveiling. Curious. During Francis's lengthy speech in Abu Dhabi, the Vicar of Christ never once mentioned the name of Jesus Christ. Rather, he talked about the Creator in keeping with his pertinacious alliance with the United Nations and its eco-religion. In his speech, Francis mentioned the word fraternity 15 times so as not to anger the Muslims, justice 9 times, and brotherhood 15 times so as to appease the Muslim Brotherhood. His is the language of accommodation and acquiescence, even submission. The utopian goal of this project, the Abraham Faith House, is the promise that dialogue and human fraternity will bring peace to the world once and for all. Francis encouraged all to enter into the, quote, Ark of the Peace, whatever that means. That's the point, folks. Ambiguous, alluring language lulls us into complacency and sometimes complicity. This is the Grand Imam who thanked Francis for his defense of Islam against the accusation of violence and terrorism. This is one of the committees that was formed, and this is their fancy website. It looks actually like the picture of hell, in my opinion. It is the Higher Committee of Human Fraternity, and this stands as the new elites, the elect, for example. The Catholics have their College of Cardinals, and this is the Higher Committee, the people who will decide the decisions in this new world religion. This is what I call Bergoglio's Babel. It is what was unveiled on September 26, 2019 in New York City. This is the new headquarters. The Vatican has its Mecca, or the Vatican, the Catholicism has its Vatican. Muslims have their Mecca, and the New World Religion now has the Abu Dhabi Abrahamic Faith Initiative. And it's important to talk about the document and this UN doublespeak that Francis engaged in. And in fact, he talked about that God wills all religions. Although there was a huge uproar among faithful traditional Catholics when the Pope said this, and he refused to retract it. But in the words of Cardinal Raymond Burke, who vehemently denounced both the Abrahamic Faith Initiative and the document that attached to it, he said that Francis is trying to create a new humanism and urge Catholics to stand up and give witness to the truth of Jesus's Christ's kingship in the face of this anti-Christian teaching, as well as the rise of Islam. Make no mistake, this Abu Dhabi declaration, which was signed by Francis and Al-Tayeb, stands as an homage to secular humanism. It posits that all men and all religions are equal, that man is sovereign and totally independent of Christ. It holds that all men are naturally brothers in a worldwide fraternity under the great creator of the universe. Look, the pontiff has only one major solemn duty, and that is to transmit the truths of the faith and uphold the teachings of the church, not the nihilistic denial of Jesus Christ to accommodate his Muslim benefactors who are underwriting this Abrahamic Faith Initiative and his UN minders who have been directing the papal agenda from the very onset. The language of the Abu Dhabi Declaration needed to be watered down, not dogmatic, not threatening, and amenable to his Islamic hopes. The document has the theological heft of, you probably all remember, Elizabeth Gilbert's bestseller, Eat, Pray, and Love. Well, that's what it sounds like. Why does secular humanism pose such a danger to the faith and to society as it serves the New Age masters? Because humanism, secular humanism, will become the substitute for Christianity, where no mention of God will be uttered. It will be presented to the world as a new form of social justice, a new form of humanism when all the needs of man are catered to. They will use the message of humanism as a substitute for the truth that we were given in the Gospels. And remember this, if you remember anything, humanism is not Christianity. It is the gateway to totalitarian New World Order. This is what they're doing. The New World Age religion is give the peons a fake religion, which sounds compassionate. Instead, folks, the new God is the almighty state, the global New World Order, with its boot on your throat and on your freedoms. The globalists are moving at lightning speed to operationalize and actualize the one world religion of the new underworld order. These are the points of this new underworld: to submit to the dictates of the UN, destroy Christianity, freedom, wipe out capitalism, impose a totalitarian world government, and the global elites are the chosen free. Phew. Here are the goals of the new world order: a one world government, one world leader, one world religion, which is what we're talking about today, and one world currency. And clearly in September of 2019, Pope Francis on a plain press conference said to the press, "Our duty is to obey the United Nations and all institutions." So he's making no secret of the fact of where he holds the United Nations in the New World Order. It is Chrislam. Chrislam is the conflation of Christianity and Islam, opening in 2022 when the Abrahamic Faith Home will be operational. This is a previous committee meeting where Francis, I think it was in 2016, where Francis had literally this sign, "Make Friends," above the group. And it reminds me of the It reminds me of the, you know, kind of that book that says everything you knew in kindergarten, everything you needed to know, you learned in kindergarten. Make friends. And here we are making friends with all the world leaders. Isn't it nice? Isn't it sweet?
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and honeybees.
So who is this Sheikh Ahmed Al-Tayeb, Francis's partner in the Abraham Initiative? What does he believe? He certainly is prominent among the Sunni Muslims. And let's get down and scrutinize beyond the glitzy hype, the hugs, the signing declarations, into the truth behind this imam's beliefs, and ultimately how his beliefs are totally incompatible with Christianity. Here he is in a 2016 interview talking about killing those Muslims who convert from Islam to Christianity.
إذا كانت الردة سوف تظهر في ثوب الجريمة والاعتداء والخيانة العظمى شيء طبيعي أن المواطنة حتتعامل معها على أنها جريمة ويجب أن تقاوم ويجب أن يكون فيها عقوبة من العقوبات لكن إذا كانت الردة لا تشكل خطرا أو جريمة على المواطنة أعتقد أن المواطنة لا تتصدى للموضوع كهذا يجب أن نتنبه جيدا لمفاهيم حقوق الإنسان وترويجها ملغومة ومملوءة بأمور يعني أو بقنابل المواطنة وكان رأيي وقلته هناك لا يمكن أن تجد مسلما مجتمعا مسلما في يوم ما من الأيام الحرية الجنسية والمثلية وكذا وكذا ده حق من حقوق المجتمعات المسلمة ترى أن هذه أمراض يجب أن تقاوم وتضارب وتعالج
نحب الناس من المقاصد العليا في الإسلام
القيمة الأخلاقية لأن المشكلة الحضارتين مختلفتين حضارة هنا تقوم على رجلين الدين والأخلاق هناك تقوم على الحرية وبعض الحرية الفردية كما قلنا أنها يعني إن هذا المرتد إذا كان يعني ارتد عن كره للإسلام وعن نية للعمل ضد الإسلام هذه خيانة عظمى لأنك أنت في مجتمع إسلامي وفي مجتمع يعني فيه الإسلام من 1400 سنة وفيه الأديان من أكثر من 5000 سنة موجود فليس من حق لأن هنا تكون الردة خروج على المجتمع صحيح خروج على الدين لكنها خروج على مقدسات المجتمع
ما هو حكم المرتد يا مولانا؟
عندنا الجمهور الفقهاء والفقه القديم كله يعتبر الردة جريمة
كل الفقهاء؟
كل تستطيع أن تقول الجمهور يعني في بعض لكن يعني لا يكادون يذكرون إلى
تقريبا
المذاهب الأربعة كلها تتفق على أن الردة جريمة وأن المرتد يستتاب وإلا يقتل ففي آيتين تعرضت لذكر الردة صراحة لكن لم تقرر عقوبة معينة أو حدا معينا وإنما تركت العقوبة إلى الآخرة وإلى الله سبحانه وتعالى يفعل بهم ما يشاء في الآخرة طيب لكن وجد هناك حديث شريف أصح يعني في حديثين الحديث الأصح فيهم اللي هو يعني الإنسان يعني لا يحل قتل المسلم إلا بإحدى ثلاث منها التارك لدينه المفارق للجماعة الذي يجب أن نتوقف عنه العبارتين أو الوصفين تارك لدينه الموصوف بأنه المفارق للجماعة الفقهاء القدامى كلهم فهموا أنه هذا ينطبق على المفارق للدين، سواء كان التارك للدين، سواء كان مفارق للجماعة بمعنى أنه ضد الجماعة أو حتى مع الجماعة، وقالوا بالقتل. هذا هو الموقف القديم، ويستوي في ذلك الرجل والمرأة إلا الأحناف، وقالوا المرأة المرتدة لها.
لماذا؟
لماذا؟ لأنها لا يتصور منها الخروج على المجتمع. وفيها
Well folks, tell me Francis, Pope Francis, what's going to happen at that fancy new Abrahamic faith house when one of your Muslim brothers visiting the mosques at that center decides to convert to Christianity? You know, it's quite clear in listening to that discussion with his partner, the Grand Imam Ahmed Tayeb, he has some bloody plans in store for somebody who decides to convert to Christianity or to any other religion if he was originally a Muslim. How do you reconcile that fall, that inevitable fall from quote-unquote brotherhood? Here's the point. We don't reconcile these radically different religions. And the Abrahamic faith initiatives, the hugs, the signing ceremony, it's all hype and lies. When Tayeb shares his cherished religious beliefs, we see the mirage of this interfaith movement crumble into oblivion and into a delusion. All is ignored, though, for the greater agenda. This is just a charade to achieve the one world religion, ignoring major significant problems. And so we have Chrislam, which is the melding and inflating of Christianity into Islam, more specifically, the submission of Christianity into Islam. And here is, unfortunately, what I believe is to be, here's the hugs and warm embraces, knowing that both these men hold diametrically opposed ideas and tenets of their faith. Beware of Chrislam. These are the differences that nobody wants to talk about. These are the differences which make the Abrahamic Faith Initiative a delusion. And we cannot talk about these things. They cannot be reconciled, and they expose the interfaith delusion. But they've been hard at work and under the radar, delivering documents. They've held conferences to lay the groundwork for this project. And how long has this been in the works? And it's been in the works for decades. And who has promoted this interfaith movement in the United States, which has taken off? Here's the rollout. In February 4th, 2019, the Abu Dhabi Declaration was signed, as we saw. They named the higher committee. Those are the people who are going to direct the conferences. You know, that sounds a little bit like, in my opinion, or what George Orwell's The Ministry of Defense, kind of a eerie sounding name. On September 22nd, they unveiled the Abrahamic Faith Center headquarters, which you all saw. And on December 5th, 2019, both Francis and Al-Tayeb asked the United Nations to propose a secular world day of fraternity. So like the Catholic Church, this new world religion has its own feast days, which the UN is now going to institute. On January 15th, 2020, there was an Abrahamic Faith Conference at the Vatican, sponsored by U.S. Ambassador Callista Gingrich and Imam Mohammed Majid, who we'll talk about. And in October of 2020, now this was supposed to be in June of 2020, there is going to be a massive extravaganza global compact of education handled and and rolled out in the Vatican with all the prominent people in the world, celebrities, government officials, religious officials, descending upon the Vatican to celebrate this new religion. But what's happening in the United States? Who are the U.S. promoters of the Abrahamic Faith Initiative? There he is, the notorious serial child abuser, sexual predator, who globetrotted around the world on behalf of Bill Clinton and Barack Obama and Jorge Bergoglio, pandering the interfaith dialogue. With his Irish wit, his soft, tender voice, his charm offensive, Cardinal Ted McCarrick spent much of his clerical career schmoozing with imams, Middle Eastern princes, and kings when he wasn't preying on little boys. He is the two-faced mask of the interfaith dialogue. Ted McCarrick is the godfather of this initiative. He worked ceaselessly to promote the alliance with Allah. McCarrick is the Machiavellian monster who breathed life, power, and political capital into the interfaith movement. When McCarrick was exposed as the serial sexual predator that he had been for 60 years, the movement lost its most prominent and prolific promoter. Until, that is, until Pope Francis picked up the mantle and increased the pace. And here is Mohammed Majid, who traveled around the world with Ted McCarrick. He was his traveling buddy and collaborator. This Mohammed Majid is the imam of the infamous Al-Dallas Mosque. He is the former president of the Islamic Society of North America, called ISNA. And Majid's organizations, which were many of them the unindicted co-conspirators in the U.S. government's Holy Land Foundation trial, which exposed funding to the terrorist groups Hamas and the Muslim Brotherhood. Majid, like McCarrick, has been a fixture in this interfaith movement. He is a master infiltrator and operator within the United States government. McCarrick, like Francis, mentioned his respect for this imam who has close ties with the Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas. Mohammed Majid was described as Obama's Sharia czar. He ensured with the groups that he represented, ISNA and CARE, that all law enforcement training materials would be wiped clean of any reference to Islam, Islamic violence. And he has been very, very effective in infiltrating all levels of government. And as a matter of fact, poses on various agencies as a key consultant. And here Majid is meeting Francis in 2020. And lately, a very, very what I consider disturbing development has emerged, which needs to be addressed today. Here is Majid with the U.S. Vatican Ambassador Callista Gingrich and, of course, her well-known husband, Newt Gingrich. The U.S. State Department hosted an Abrahamic Faith Conference at the Vatican with Majid, who also co-sponsored this event. And what is especially troubling is that even with this, our new administration, Majid keeps showing up. And they unveiled the Abrahamic Faith Statement. And this document was produced and supported by the Vatican and the U.S. State Department, including Ambassador at Large for Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback. But do you see the penetration and proliferation of this new world religion now into the United States government? To me, this is a very, very troubling development. I'm just going to take one quick section from this development. It's posted. I posted the Abrahamic Faith Initiative document on my website, but this gives you a flavor for the denial of what's going on here. In this document, it says, we are conscious of the brutalization of discourse facilitated in no small part by the gifts of modern technology. This contributes to the increasing, can't read it, of our respective religious communities, places of worship, and institutions. Now, do you get that? The internet is to blame for religious persecution and violence. The internet apparently is to blame for the, you remember the 21 Egyptian Christian cops that were beheaded by ISIS on the shores of the Mediterranean Sea. If this isn't a delusional distraction of denial of the first order, I don't know what else is. And let's not forget the bizarre and very troubling statements by Francis. Equating Islam with terrorism is foolish. And here are some more troubling statements by Pope Francis. If I talk about Muslim violence, I must talk about Catholic violence. It isn't right to say that Islam is a terrorist faith. His comments could be dismissed if it weren't such a brutal insult to the ongoing global genocide of Christians at the hands of Muslims. Francis cannot feign ignorance of Christian bloodshed by Islamists. Here's the 2020 report from the Open Doors World Watch List that has people in the ground in countries all over the world. And let's look at their findings with regards to Christian persecutions. One out of seven of the top 10 countries on the watch list for Christian persecutions, the primary cause of the persecution is Islamic oppression. And the Open Doors watch list found that 260 million Christians are at risk of persecution. And according to the watch list, Christians do not even tell their own children about their Christian faith until children are much older for fear that they might slip and say something to their friends or neighbors. One in every eight Christian is killed every day for his faith. And according to the Open Doors report, 12,000 Christians have been killed since the Muslim Nigerian President Buhari assumed office on May 29, 2015. Jihadists have driven 4 to 5 million Christians from their homes and destroyed 2,000 churches in 57 months and killed 20 clergymen and kidnapped 50 others. 100% of the victims in Nigeria are Christians, as Islamic Boko Haram and the Fulani herdsmen operate with impunity under the Buhari administration. And there is barely a whisper from the Vatican. Here's a word to the wise about this upcoming video, after you've just heard about the reality of what goes on in the Christian world. This video was produced by the Vatican, and it encapsulates the slick propaganda at work. Notice, when you watch this, there's no crucifix displayed. Even the Pope's around his neck is hidden. Notice the simpleton smiles, the bromides of love, no Christian symbols. You wouldn't want to offend anyone. It ignores the blatant genocides of Christians around the globe. But here is happy talk. This is propaganda. Cue the inspirational music. Watch this hype on display. And the Vatican deploys all of its vast marketing resources and high-priced talent to lure you into the happy clap world of the interfaith dialogue and its one world religion. Here it is.
La mayor parte de los habitantes del planeta se declaran creyentes. Esto debería provocar un diálogo entre las religiones. No debemos dejar de orar por él y colaborar con quienes piensan distinto.
Confío en Buda.
Creo en Dios.
Creo en Jesucristo.
Creo en Dios, Alá.
Muchos piensan distinto, sienten distinto, buscan a Dios o encuentran a Dios de diversa manera. En esta multitud, en este abanico de religiones, hay una sola certeza que tenemos para todos. Todos somos hijos de Dios.
Creo en el amor.
Creo en el amor.
Creo en el amor.
Creo en el amor.
Confío en vos para difundir mi petición de este mes. Que el diálogo sincero entre hombres y mujeres de diversas religiones conlleve frutos de paz y justicia. Confío en tu oración.
I wonder what the Nigerian Christians think when they see that. I wonder if they believe in the love that is being carried out by the Islamic jihadists day in and day out. The goal, folks, is to create global citizens who are subject to nameless and unelectable bureaucrats who set the laws, who control our behavior, determine who lives and dies, and what our religion is. And up until now, the Vatican and Christianity have been an impenetrable obstacle to the goals of the New World Order. The globalists, though, have found their moral voice in Francis. So what's next for the Abrahamic Faith Initiative? What extravaganza do they have planned to move forward on this one world religion? It's showtime. This insidious global education compact is going to be rolled out in October of 2020. This is the famous street Via della Conciliazione, which will be filled with booths, a veritable laser show, a village, because you know it takes a village to raise children. Pope Francis actually said the theme will be, it takes a village. Where did we hear that before? The Pope has invited representatives from the major religions, from NGOs, from humanitarian institutions, key figures from politics. No doubt his good friend Bernie Sanders will be free to drop by. Celebrities like his personal buddy Bono, Leo DiCaprio, George Clooney, all the climate change celebrities. Surely Greta Thunberg will make an appearance to sign a global pact on education. Look, this glitzy propaganda is to hand on to our next generation of young people a, quote, united and fraternal, quote, unquote, common home. The goal, listen to Francis, is this will result in men and women who are open, who are responsible, prepared to listen, to dialogue, and reflect with others, and capable of weaving relationships with families between generations and with civil society to create a new humanism. He wants to create, quote, an educational village in which all people, according to their respective roles, share the tasks of forming a network of open human relationship. That, in my opinion, is global gobbledygook. It's Sharia. It's Chrislam. It's the New World Order's one world religion. And as Cardinal Raymond Burke pointed out about a one world government, it's fundamentally anti-God. The idea of a one world government, he says, is fundamentally the same phenomenon that was displayed by the builders of the Tower of Babel, who presumed to exercise the power of God on earth to unite heaven with earth. What we need, Cardinal Burke says, is a religious conversion, a strong teaching and practice of faith in God and obedience to the order with which God has created us. Finally, I've only briefly touched on some of the initiatives and people behind this political pope who has demonstrated his radical beliefs and alliances. He has become the religious icon for the New World Order. An education pact touts the Pope where the new humanism where God withdraws. This radical political Pope promotes the United Nations global agenda of the New World Order. He promotes massive, unbridled migration. Vatican-China deal, which destroyed Christianity. He submits to Islam and refuses to criticize Islamic violence. He advocates for open borders around the world, promotes UN climate change policy, supports the New World Order global agenda promoted by the UN, and he has repeatedly condemned capitalism. Francis criticizes Trump as unchristian. But speaking of the destruction of Christianity and the replacement of it in a new world order, let's quickly pivot to another, what I view as damnable secret plot by Pope Francis. The deal with the devil. This is Comrade Bergoglio and his secret 2018 deal with the communist devil. Now let's veer into this strategic global operation of the New World Order. This diabolical maneuver secured a guarantee that Christianity would be wiped out in China. President Xi Jinping shrewdly employed the Vicar of Christ, Jorge Bergoglio, to assist him in his mass extermination of Christianity and any other pesky religions. Keep in mind that this is also a critically advantageous because the leaders of the Hong Kong Freedom March, we saw millions take to the streets, were largely Catholic and Christians. Xi could not afford for those freedom marchers to grow and expand to mainland China. How clever of Xi to deploy a willing partner in the man who sits in the chair of St. Peter to de-Christianize the Middle Kingdom, China. This tactic mirrors the advice of Sun Tzu, that great ancient Chinese military leader who understood, quote, that all warfare is based on deception. Hence, the two negotiators, Xi and Bergoglio, kept the details and negotiations hidden from the public and Catholics. Again, Sun Tzu counsels that the supreme art of war is to subdue the enemy without fighting. Along with the Catholic leader as his co-conspirator, President Xi and his gangland party of communists have benefited from the perfect foil, using a papal deal to destroy Christianity with little or no resistance from within China and around the globe. This deal with the devil, the papal capitulation to the communist Chinese, was handing over the keys of the kingdom to the atheistic Communist Party. What is most infuriating about this outrageous papal capitulation to the godless, brutal, authoritarian communist government, he chose to allow the communists to choose and appoint bishops who have authority over the Catholic faithful. In the not so distant history of China, it is fraught with Catholic heroes and martyrs who knew firsthand the demonic nature of the Chinese Communist Party and its communist patriotic Catholic Church, the one that Francis now embraces and encourages everybody to participate in. For 60 years, the underground faithful Catholic Church has suffered so much, but remained faithful to the Catholic Church. Yet Francis, in 2018, urges his priests and laity to join the Communist Patriotic Church. You know, in 1958, Pope Pius XII wrote an encyclical about China and the Communist Party. And he talked about the Communist Patriotic Catholic Church. And he stated, under the appearance of patriotism, which in reality is just a fraud, this patriotic association aims primarily at making Catholics gradually embrace, get this, the tenets of atheistic materialism by which God himself is denied and religious principles are rejected. Bishop James Walsh, who was a Maryknoll missionary in China and an American, when his superiors in America wanted him to come back to the United States, they asked him about the growing communist threat in the 1950s, and they were concerned about his own safety. And Bishop Walsh said, "To put up with a little inconvenience at my age is nothing. Besides, I am sick and tired of being pushed around on account of my religion." And he went on to say, nobody has illusions about the Chinese Communist Party's determination to eliminate all religions. Well, Bishop Walsh was eventually arrested by Chairman Mao's Communist Party in 1958, and he was sentenced to 20 years in prison. And he spent 12 years of his prison sentence in isolation and he was finally released in 1970. Yet, fast forward 60 years, countless martyrs later, in the faithful suffering church of Christianity and Catholicism, they've been betrayed, none other than by our present Pope Francis. His insidious, covert pact with President Xi and the Communist Party is especially heinous in light of the struggles endured by the Catholic Church in the 1950s. Make no mistake, the Communist Party hasn't changed in 60 years. If anything, it has become more violent and vicious and cunning with an array of technological tools at its disposal to brutalize people of faith. Here is, under the brutal boot of President Xi Jinping, the self-declared emperor of life, Pope Francis shockingly agrees to accept the communist-created Patriotic Church as the one true Catholic Church in China. And furthermore, he concedes papal power to the communists, the atheistic Chinese Communist Party, to appoint bishops who have always been the successor to the 12 apostles. Unbelievable. The next video will show you the secret agreement signed and executed on September 22nd, 2018, and it has been roundly condemned by the international religious freedom community, human rights organizations, and a number of Catholic prelates.
The Vatican-China agreement has been kept secret, so secret, one of two living Chinese cardinals, Cardinal Joseph Zen, has never even seen it. What can be seen is the persecution of faithful Chinese Catholics that has continued to intensify in the wake of the agreement reached in September 2018 and other moves the Vatican has made. Cardinal Zen explained to Church Militant the three steps the Vatican has taken to accomplish what he calls a total sellout of the underground Chinese church.
So the first step was that secret agreement for the selection of bishops, and then the legitimization of the seven excommunicated bishops, and asking two underground legit bishops to step down. And then finally, last June, came out that document, the so-called pastoral guidance, encouraging people to join the Patriotic Association. Incredible. So it's a total sellout.
Zen has tried to speak with Pope Francis, only to hear the pontiff say he would look into the matter, but never following up or responding to requests for follow-up. Before the Vatican-China agreement, the communist government had strict laws, but authorities did not enforce them. Since the agreement, those laws have been enforced with growing intensity.
The most terrible article is that people under 18 years of age cannot join any religious activity. They are not allowed into the church. Terrible. It's all the regulation. They didn't enforce that, but now they enforce.
Cardinal Zen requests prayers, without which the underground church, he says, will disappear. William Mahoney, Church Militant, New York.
You know, it's really hard to believe that Cardinal Zen, he's retired cardinal from Hong Kong. He's been described as a living saint, but he is single-handedly fighting the communists and fighting this deal. And they have, as he pointed out, been refused to show him the deal, refused to communicate with him, and he has seen his Catholic Church that he has fought for so many years crumble. People are walking away from the faith. They feel abandoned by Pope Francis as he capitulates to the communists. Here are some of the comments by Zen regarding the secret Vatican deal, a total sellout, a suicide pact, delivering the church into the hands of the enemy. The Vatican got it badly wrong, and perverse deception. Here, I had to show you this picture because here are the two communist-appointed bishops. They showed up at the Vatican. They were invited by Francis at the Vatican. That one on the left, if he doesn't look like a communist apparatchik, I don't know what does. But here he is, and here they are meeting Pope Francis, who is thrilled to meet his new Chinese communist bishops. But this Vatican-Chinese secret agreement stamps the Vatican Holy See imprimatur on the ongoing campaign of the Chinese anti-religious persecution laws, policies. And it is, in my opinion, violates and repudiates the Convention on the Rights of the Child. Children have the right to pursue freedom of religion. And in China, if you're under the age of 18, you cannot enter a church, practice the faith in any way. And he continues to remain silent. And that was 18 months ago when the deal was signed. And frankly, most of the cardinals have remained silent. Inexplicably, the Holy See, the global religious sovereign of the Catholic Church, he embarked on these negotiations during a very tumultuous time when the government was beginning to engage in this Catholic and Christian persecution. And nevertheless, even though the communists were tearing down churches, they continued to go ahead with this deal. And it shows that they had, you know, utter contempt for their partner, the Vatican Church, and the Chinese were showing no good faith in an attempt to show that they would respect the religious freedom. So I guess the question is, why did Francis promote this deal with the brutal regime. Well, this is Francis. You know, he said many, many times he calls for the global wealth redistribution. He criticizes capitalism both in exhortations and in speeches. He sounds not unlike our socialist Bernie Sanders. Oh, wait. Bernie Sanders was invited by Francis to the Pontifical Academy at the Vatican during the 2016 presidential campaign. And Bernie met the Pope. Here's a slide of Bernie Sanders lecturing at the Vatican on the evils of capitalism, along with, you can see the other man, his socialist pal, Bolivian President Evo Morales. These are comrades in spirit with Francis and point to the comfort he has with the with socialism and communism. Remember, the goal of socialism is communism. And you may recall this hideous gift that the socialist Evo Morales gave, a crucifix in the shape of a hammer and sickle, to Francis, which he graciously accepted and even wore as a necklace. This gift, I think, symbolizes the melding of Christianity with the symbol of the godless Communist Party. Furthermore, many of Pope Francis's negotiators and close collaborators, like Bishop Marcello Sorondo, who heads up the Vatican Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences, in 2018, Sorondo, and this was laughed at by many people, but he was dead serious, that China is the best implementer of the Catholic social doctrine and praised the extraordinary communist state. Sorondo told the Vatican Insider newspaper that when he visited communist China, he found that the communist Chinese seek the common good. There we go again, the common good, and that it subordinates things to the general good. Then he made this preposterous statement that the People's Republic of China has defended the dignity of the human person. Can you imagine? And in the area of climate change, he said, and as we know, the most polluted country in the world is China. And in the area of climate change, Sorondo said that China is assuming a moral leadership that others have abandoned. Well, tell that to the Falun Gong and the underground Catholic Church and the Uyghurs and the millions of Uyghurs who are in detention camps and who are having their human organs trafficked by the Communist Party. So is it any wonder that Cardinal Zen writes to the College of Cardinals that the church is killed in China? And let me just show you just a slight, you know, few pictures of how China is destroying Christian churches. The Chinese communists they're on a demolition derby of destroying all crucifixes on any churches. I mean, there are thousands of these pictures. Toppling crosses, destroying churches, many into rubble. And when anyone complains about the destruction of these Christian churches, Pope Francis pretends either not to understand or not to comment. But the condemnation by international human rights groups and religious freedoms groups is swift and vociferous. They all tied the Vatican deal, the China Aid Group, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, they all say that the Vatican deal has caused an uptick in violence and that they universally condemn this deal, which triggered violence and threw the Catholics in China and the Christians in China under the bus. Clergy have been arrested, harassed, and detained and imprisoned under this deal. There's one bishop that was arrested for not following the Vatican orders to submit to the Patriotic Church. And who is behind the Patriotic Church Chinese jail? Here he comes again. None other than the disgraced Cardinal McCarrick. A Vatican whistleblower disclosed about Cardinal McCarrick, who served as the envoy in the very beginning for this disastrous Vatican-China deal. The same guy who was promoting the interfaith deal. Here are the Hugs, the serial sexual predator dispatched by Francis to China in June of 2013. And at the direct and explicit request of Pope Francis, Cardinal McCarrick began the negotiations with the Chinese government. And it's interesting to note that Cardinal McCarrick, the notorious sexual predator of male children and young seminarians, raises the specter, I think, of the origin of this destructive and suspicious agreement. This depraved ad hoc diplomat enjoyed and cultivated decades long of friendships with members of the Communist Party and the communist controlled Patriotic Church. McCarrick was always a welcome visitor, and he identified as a habitual visitor to China going back into 1998. McCarrick acknowledged having friends high up in the government, the communist government. And in June, when he went to China, he was a representative of Pope Francis. He always stayed in the state-controlled Beijing Seminary, and he traveled back and forth to China from 2006 to 2013. Cardinal McCarrick's long-held sympathetic leanings toward the communist-controlled church were well-known by Pope Francis, and his sympathies were clearly viewed as a plus as far as Pope Francis was concerned. And we now know that the Catholic Church in China has gone deeper into the underground. And, you know, it's interesting, McCarrick gushed over Pope Francis and President Xi. He said, "This Pope loves China. He has said on many occasions that China is wonderful. I hope that Pope Francis will visit China." And perhaps that's the underlying reason behind this negotiation. Now listen to McCarrick's assessment of Pope Francis and Xi Jinping. They both are a special gift to the world. Can you imagine? A special gift to the world. In April of 2018, when the global news broke about that Cardinal McCarrick had sexually abused an altar boy and was the subject of many sexual abuse settlements, McCarrick resigned from the College of Cardinals. And in 2018, he withdrew and was laicized from public ministry. But only 2 months after he withdrew, the deal was signed. Comrade Bergoglio, listen to this, of what happened in the Vatican, in St. Peter's Square, in January of this year. Merry Christmas. This Chinese woman wanted to ask Francis to help bishops and priests and lay people who were persecuted by President Xi and his government, according to a priest. You notice she said, made the sign of the cross right before she met him. Here's the Chinese law, the actual law that says that minors are forbidden to receive religious education. No child under the age of 18 is allowed into a church and nor can they practice their faith. But finally, it is much worse than that. children cannot go on to college, cannot go on to high school unless they take a test demonstrating that they do not practice a religion and that they are atheists. This is Pope Bergoglio, how he has conflated Christianity with Islam. He refuses to condemn the global persecution of Christians. He has undermined the faithful underground church, supported the communist-run patriotic church. He has triggered a massive crackdown by the CCP of all Catholic and Christian churches, and he provided the CCP with an excuse to destroy churches. Please pray for the underground church and Catholics who are now suffering deeply. And this is one of my favorite sayings. The devil whispered in my ear, "You're not strong enough to withstand the storm." Today I whispered in the devil's ear, "I am the storm." Will we protest this abomination by the brutal Chinese thugs as they terrorize 1.3 billion of their citizens? At the very least, we must pray for the underground church. And finally, during this challenging time in America, we must not heed the whisperings of the evil one. Be not afraid, I urge you. Be bold, be fearless, and be the storm. Thank you, and God bless America.
Wow, that's very powerful, Liz. Absolutely wonderful. Yes, please talk about your website, yourchildren.com.
Okay, thank you. My website, I'm going to try and get out of here. My website is yourchildren.com, where I posted many of my articles. They appear in Breitbart Daily Caller and Town Hall. I talk about not only the church, what's going on around the world, the interfaith dialogue, but also I talk about child protection issues, human trafficking. So many of my speeches are on the website. I also have resources connected to this speech for people who want additional information. So I encourage people to go on that website. I'm posting all the time, and wanted to alert people about in this time when many people are maybe not watching what's going on because we're all consumed by the virus, but also to pay attention to this rolling out of the one world religion, which is the key component of the New World Order.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Liz, I want you to talk about your trip to the Vatican and what you saw there in a little more detail, because you told me several years ago when you were there, you were astounded because there were all these Soros people there. There were College of Cardinals was filled full of people who are strong advocates of socialism. Maybe at the same time, talk a little bit about Pope Francis and his background as a socialist leader and some of the things that he's been involved in.
Sure. As I mentioned, in November 2013, I went to attend inside the Vatican a human trafficking conference. I was very excited, couldn't wait to hear what the Vatican was doing. I walked in and I felt like I was walking into a theological buzzsaw. There was one other friend of mine there, and he turned and said to me, "What are all these globalists doing here? Are we the only pro-lifers?" Now, mind you, I was sitting in the Vatican at a Vatican-sponsored event on human trafficking. To the left of me were radical UN people. I didn't hear much talk about human trafficking. I heard a lot of talk about a global minimum wage and about the value of socialism, but I heard very little about human trafficking and the scourge. I walked out of there. I was in a daze. I could not believe what I was hearing. And I met the Pope and studied him. I was in his presence for 20 minutes at least. It wasn't one of those Congo lines. He came into our meeting where we met him. And so as a result of that, trying to figure out if my lion eyes were deceiving me, when in fact I realized the more I studied the Vatican, the more I looked at his conferences, who was sponsoring his conferences, I understood that what I saw was in fact a radical papacy that was bringing in the most radical cardinals, the most radical Soros operatives. These are the consultants who have even written papal documents. And as a result of writing these papal documents, they have pushed forward and promoted the UN. Now, we all know about his embrace of the Paris Climate Treaty. I mean, quite frankly, when Donald Trump spoke at the United Nations, Donald Trump spoke more about religious freedom and religious persecution of Christians and about God than Pope Francis, who focused largely on climate change. Well, as a result of going to the Vatican, what next happened is in April of 2015, when the Pope was in the process of issuing his environmental agenda, his eco agenda, as eco encyclical, as I call it, I went as part of a delegation sponsored by the Heartland Institute. And we were trying to urge the Vatican to listen to the other side of the climate agenda. I often joke that I was part of this delegation. It was myself and six geniuses. These were men, scientists, climate scientists, who had put men on the moon. They had worked for NASA. They taught at MIT, the best and the brightest, who were frankly shocked at who was speaking at the Vatican, who the Pope was relying on as experts. And they were trying to urge the Pope to look at the other side of the science. My position when I was there was merely as a child advocate, because I recognize the UN Sustainable Development Goals, or as I call them, the UN Depopulation Goals, were anti-life. Many of the people who the Pope relies on are the most radical Soros proponents of anti-abortion, of abortion, and which is baffling and so disconcerting, and yet the Vatican dismisses any complaints about them. Jeffrey Sachs, who is a UN high official bureaucrat, who has taught at Columbia, he's an American, an economist. He has been a benefactor of George Soros for decades. Jeffrey Sachs has spoken at the Vatican and written Vatican documents, papal documents, at least 30 times as the Vatican's expert. These are the kinds of people that Francis is relying on. I mean, I could go on for days going down the list of Soros supported people. They have infiltrated, but I would say that they were invited into the Vatican. Anyway, the Pope did not, in the Vatican, was not interested in these great scientists from America who wanted to give him sound advice, who wanted to show him that the people he was relying on, many of whom were quacks, many of them don't even have scientific degrees. The Vatican was not interested in listening. The agenda, the environmental agenda, in fact, I mean, it's really pathetically hysterical. The Pope even created a new ecological sin. You know, bless me, Father, I forgot to take the recycle bin out today. You know, it's just absurd. Now, to your question of why Francis, we know that there was a strange, sudden resignation by Pope Benedict. Pope Benedict, I might add, shares many of the agenda of the political agenda of Trump. He is, Pope Benedict took the name of Saint Benedict because Benedict wanted to re-Christianize Europe. He was against mass Muslim migration. Pope Benedict, who's brilliant, understood the complexities of climate science and knew that it was not wise to get into a scientific debate as a religious leader, a scientific debate that continues to this day. And I could go on and on. And in comes this largely unknown cardinal from Argentina, Buenos Aires, Argentina, who was a Jesuit. Jesuits were known to be, never been a Jesuit in history. Jesuits are known to be, very liberal. And interestingly, Pope Francis Jorge Bergoglio disclosed that one of his closest mentors when he was growing up was a communist woman who talked to him all about communism. And he had a very, I'd say, tumultuous time when he was in Buenos Aires. Many believe that he cooperated with the military junta in turning in religious figures who ended up being arrested and disappeared and kidnapped by the radical, violent junta, military junta. But at a very young age, as he was head of the Jesuit provincial down in Argentina, he suddenly got sent to Germany. We don't know, to write, supposedly to write his doctoral dissertation. He never got written. He came back to Argentina, but has been largely under the radar. Although when the famous speech by Pope Benedict, the Regensburg speech, where he talks about violence in the Islam religion, Bergoglio did speak out against Pope Benedict at that time. So suddenly he becomes the new pope after the resignation of Benedict. I think, you know, I'm sure many of your listeners know that what happened was Cardinal Danneels of Belgium, who is a very powerful cardinal, discussed in his biography that they had created a group of liberal cardinals called the St. Gallen Mafia. Can you imagine the St. Gallen Mafia, who met secretly and covertly for years to plot the overthrow of the Catholic Church and replace it with a liberal Catholic Church. And they decided that Jorge Bergoglio would be the replacement once that was available. And so this has been under the radar, and obviously they were quite successful. And I might add that every single thing that Pope Bergoglio did during the administration of Barack Obama, they worked in lockstep, both diplomatically to have the Cuba Treaty, the Cuba détente with the United States and Cuba. That was all done with the help of the Vatican, with behind the doors, secret diplomacy, the Paris Treaty, climate treaty, which both Francis and Obama wanted and pushed, the Iran deal, which the Vatican provided back channels and supported, and McCarrick wrote Washington Post editorials supporting the Iran deal. So there was no better partner to Barack Obama than Pope Francis. And I think that's very curious because he came on the scene almost immediately during the second administration of Barack Obama. The second administration of Barack Obama would not have been as successful had Pope Benedict still been in place. And we know because he would have resisted, and to have the Catholic Church resist the plans of the New World Order promulgated by Barack Obama would have been a problem that Barack Obama did not want anybody interfering with these rollouts. So that's kind of my sense of the role he played, his history, his history, Bergoglio's history is, I think, masked almost as effectively as Barack Obama's has been masked. Mm-hmm. We know these bits and pieces that are kind of these red flags, literally these red flags that are popping up. I often say that when he became Pope, instead of white smoke, it should have been red smoke that came out of the chimney at St. Peter's, alerting all of us that we have a communist sympathizer in the See of Peter. So that's, you know, I could go into greater detail, but I think this alliance of the political agenda of Francis and Barack Obama, and it's still being carried out. Of course, we know how he's gone after Trump, is saying Trump's not Christian. And I suspect that he will be involved in the 2020 election. Mm-hmm. You know, there were very strong rumors that the Vatican had sent $1 million to support Hillary Clinton's campaign in 2016. We'll see what happens, but I think Catholics have to make a determination about who this man is. What is his agenda? His agenda, in my mind, is anti-Catholic and certainly anti-American.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Liz, you mentioned that he supported the climate accord in Paris. Part of that, he supports, and he openly has stated that he supports Agenda 21, Agenda 2030 views, that he fully supports those. Now, one of the things that comes out of Agenda 21 was the fact that they want to reduce the world's population to fewer than a billion people. It's a very anti-human agenda that it drives Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030.
Dan, you have done some great shows on this and really educated the public about this issue. I call it culling the herd. Mm-hmm. And what immediately concerned me about the Wuhan virus was this culling of the herd. Mm-hmm. And what concerns me about what they're doing to Christians and the Muslim Uyghurs is the culling of the herd. And the now, look, the people that Francis had speaking at the Vatican, many of them believe and advocate that there should only be 1 billion people mm-hmm. in the world. There are 7.3 billion or 7.2 billion people on this earth. But these people, this is the reason why. The reason why they need to depopulate, to call the herd, is because it is easier for the one world mm-hmm. government to maintain control over the general population. Right. And especially, and this is what is so hideous about the people that Francis is inviting into the Vatican. You know, they are focusing their agenda in, like a laser beam, on Africa. You know, Jeff Sachs, Francis's consultant and advisor, who he even gave an award to, spoke in Nigeria. Now, this white man addressed a prominent group of Nigerians and said, really, the people of Nigeria must limit their families to 3 children only. Now, can you imagine, you know, a white man going into Africa and telling you, you can't have any more than 3 children. But this is the arrogance and the hubris of the globalists who want to not only take down the church, reduce the population drastically. And this is what is the concern about, whether it's the Wuhan virus or other plagues, that we have to be attentive that there is, in my opinion, a political agenda that's mm-hmm. going on here, and the purpose of which, you know, we're going to hear, I mean, this is what I was talking about, beautiful language, sustainable development. who isn't for sustainable development, right? It sounds so laudatory. But in fact, the UN Sustainable Development Goals, if you go through them, if you drill down, as you have, Dan, so many times with your guests and experts, if you drill down, the ultimate goal, I call them the Sustainable Depopulation Goals. And I want the public to remember that and to keep that in the forefront, because it is difficult unless you take the time to really study what they're saying. And the money that's being poured in to the Sustainable Development Goals, the Agenda 21, 2030, is just unimaginable. We've got Soros and the globalists and the global elite pouring billions into this effort. And you know, largely it's Africa and America that are pushing back. You know, the cardinals and bishops in Africa are telling Bill Gates and the UN, stay out of our continent, stay out of our countries. Don't tell, we know what you're up to. You want to depopulate our country. You know, there's a pro-life advocate, Uju is her name. And she said, you know, in her country, I think it's Africa, in Nigeria, there is no word for abortion. You know, and yet the Jeffrey Sachs, who promotes it, and others in the UN are pouring in drugs and vaccines and education under sexual and reproductive health to reduce the population. So ideally, so they can take all the rich resources in that magnificent continent. Same thing with the United States. And I would urge people to go on Stephen Mosier's Population Research Institute website. Steve's got some great videos, animation videos, cartoons about demystifying the, you know, this global overpopulation. He just crushes the myth that there's an overpopulated globe. It's done very easily. It's easy to understand, and it's shocking how it can be reduced to some very compelling testimony.
Well, and Liz, you know, you talk about how Bergoglio, Pope Francis, is such a big supporter of Red China in so many things, yet in truth, Red China is the biggest polluter in the world by far, and yet he promotes all this so-called sustainable development, but they always give a free pass to any of the communist and socialist countries. This isn't about the environment. It's not about maintaining the church. This is about global communism, and that's exactly what they have in mind. Isn't that right?
It's absolutely true. Anybody, you know, before the Wuhan virus, look at a climate map, and you'll see the most polluted country in the world is China. China signed the climate Paris Treaty. I mean, they don't care. You know, they flaunt any kind of agreement. They don't abide by any agreement. But Francis knows this. This is common knowledge. And yet to say that China is making great headway with climate change, it's preposterous. But it exposes, as you said, Dan, the political agenda ongoing in this papacy, that they will be in denial about climate change because the political agenda to promote communism. You know, the first part of my talk was about the conflation of Christianity into Islam. There's a saying that Islam is the sword of communism. Islam destroys communism. Islam destroys Christianity. Look at the 4 to 5 million Christians that were chased out of the Middle East by the Islamists. The communists didn't have to go in. They could just sit back and see all of the Christians flee the Middle East, the home of Christianity. Mm-hmm. Look at what's happening in the United States. The same thing. This the submission to Islam in political correctness. So we see the sort of the sort of Islam, and we now are seeing, and that's why we have to talk about communism. We can't just talk about socialism. Mm-hmm. The goal of socialism is communism, and you know, I don't know if it's because of the old McCarthy days, but it's time that Americans begin to call communism for what it is. And that's the agenda underway in the New World Order.
Mm-hmm. Well, Liz, one of the things that comes to mind is the fact that the former Soviet Union was the biggest training ground for Middle East Islamic radical terrorism. They were the training ground for it. They are like I don't know what you call it. They're in bed together, and the communists think that if they get radical Islam, they get Islam to destroy Christianity, it'll be easier to work with Islam. Well, guess what? It's going to be tougher for them. Why in the world are they doing this stuff?
Well, fortunately, I don't think like a communist. I don't know. We know Chechnya, what happened in the radical things that happened in Chechnya, in Russia, and the radical Islam. So, I mean, I think it's important to begin as Americans to understand this parallel track that's going on between radical Islam and the communist agenda. And we see it going on. I mean, all the Muslims have to do, though, is look at what President Xi is doing to the Uyghurs, rounding them all up, throwing them in detention camps. He's removing valuable organs. He's trafficking in human organs from the Uyghurs. Horrible detention, torture that's going on. I mean, this is the face of the emperor for life. This is the man who Pope Francis is making deals with, who is trusting the millions of Catholics and Christians in China to. He's not to be trusted. We've seen, with the Wuhan virus, that we can't get straight information coming out of China. And had we had, like most regular countries would have immediately alerted the world to this dangerous virus. But it was held in check. It was held in secret. We know communists operate in secret. And as a result, we see a world suffering under this. I mean, as I look at these numbers, all I can think of is culling the herd, culling the herd with this virus. And sadly, it's our older citizens, our more vulnerable citizens that are falling subject to this horrible virus. So to have been able to succeed in getting somebody like Francis, who is sympathetic to communism and socialism and is a virulent anti-American, by the way. He hates America, although he's happy to take all the money from the wealthy Catholics. I mean, that's okay. To see him in the powerful, the moral voice of the world, is always been the Holy See, that the world has always looked to, the Vatican. To see him co-opted and now in cahoots with the UN, with the Islamists, with the Chinese Communist Party and their leaders. It's a tragedy. It's infuriating. And Catholics need to start vocalizing and talking about this and not being afraid to criticize this man. I mean, I say it once, I say it, we've had 40, 50 terrible, terrible popes over our 2000 plus history. And apparently we have one now, and it seems to be very clear. And he's coming.
I think he's terrible. I think he's a radical in the worst way. Liz, before we run out of time, I want you to talk a little bit about Phil Haney. I want you to kind of expound on your conversations with him and what you think happened there.
Well, you know, as you know, with Phil was very generous with his time and his knowledge and would drop everything to help a fellow worker in this field. I had given a presentation on the Abrahamic Faith Initiative. I didn't even know on this conference call that Phil was part of the conference call. But it was much like a shorter version of what I gave today. And I ended the conversation, clicked off my webinar, and the first call I received was from Phil, who I had worked with on and off. We had given speeches together. I had worked on the danger, exposing female genital mutilation, working on, the penetration of the Islamists in federal government and in law enforcement and the danger that occurred. But there was no one better than Phil. Phil knew it all. Phil is, to use your title, connected the dots in ways that nobody did. He was the master scientist in this endeavor. So Phil called me and said, Liz, you're on to something. This has got to be exposed. We have got to be talking about the Abrahamic Faith Initiative. This is the beginning of the rollout of the New World Order religion. You need to investigate these guys who are behind it. He especially talked about Al-Tayeb, who I talked about today. And Phil said, whatever you need, and if you're stuck, call me. I'll be able to help you. This is an important agenda that needs to be spoken everywhere you go. They have to talk about this. So I thanked Phil. We talked a little bit about what he was doing and that he again reiterated this Abraham Faith Initiative is the beginning of the big delusion. And it's slick. It's full of propaganda, and it's an influence operation. That he kept on saying, Liz, this is an influence operation. You've got to let people know about that. Little did I know when I hung up from Phil that that was the last time I'd hear from him.
And how did he actually die? I mean, let's talk about that.
Yeah, it was on February 21st. His body was found in a parking area on a major expressway highway. Apparently he was shot in the chest. The initial report was that it was a suicide, but anybody who spent any time with Phil, and I've traveled around with Phil always traveled in a broken old car. He never flew by plane because he knew, the dangers of flow. And, Phil had an old flip phone. And, Phil was found at 10 in the morning, I believe, on the side of the road. I'm still shocked. I'm still stunned and still numb by this. It is such a loss for our community, Dan, for those in law enforcement who relied on his intimate knowledge and wisdom. There wasn't a subject that Phil didn't understand in this Islamic infiltration into the United States. And so there apparently this week, this coming week, there's going to be an additional report by the sheriff. I do know that they asked the FBI to come in and do a ballistics report, investigate. There's an autopsy. They were investigating, doing a forensic investigation of his phones, his laptop, where he lived.
Liz, I'm sorry. I hate to cut in, but it looks like we're going to have a live cut in by the president.
Oh my goodness.
And we're real close to the end of the show. I want to thank you so much for being our guest And I want you to, again, yourchildren.com, correct? That's your website?
Y-O-R-E, that's correct, yes.
All right. Well, this has been a fascinating discussion. And incidentally, that sure reminds me of Vince Foster, the same circumstances. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That happens
a lot. We'll find out. Hopefully we'll find out.
We will. Well, thank you again for being our guest, Liz. I absolutely adore you. You're a wonderful lady. Thank you for being such a great truth seeker. And I'll be having you back again very, very soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
It was 1776 when the founders signed the writ of independence from the Brits. It was revolution. Now an enemy from within would enslave us all again and deprive us of our rights in the Constitution. Restore the Republic. Wake up, it's time to understand. Restore the Republic. We're losing our freedom in the land.